And we have a number of people who have signed on, and I think we can go ahead and get started. My name is Jonathan Wilson, and I'm president of the First Friday Breakfast Club and have been for a while. On your screen, my name is shown as Scott Cucneo. That's actually my partner and my personal IT director. And so that was pretty much the way I was able to get signed on at all. We have a number of members that are present. I want especially to welcome our scholars, all of you who are signed on. Thank you for your participation. We, of course, are a bit disappointed that we couldn't have hosted you in person at Hoyt Sherman Place. That has been historically a wonderful experience for the scholars as well as our members and guests. But these are not the usual times, and these are not the usual circumstances. And driven by the best medical advice available, it was not going to be prudent for us to meet in person. I particularly want to thank our speaker who has been willing to participate in this remote virtual meeting format. We have a few announcements that need to be made. I guess first and foremost, usually at this meeting, we would be announcing a whole series of Pride events that would be taking place throughout the month of June. It is my understanding, however, that because of the current circumstances, Pride activities have been called off for this year. And at least at this point, other activities have not been scheduled. So we won't have any announcements regarding that. We do have another opportunity, though, that I want to bring to your attention that is a Des Moines Mankind project. It's launching an initiative to create a regular opportunity for networking and relationship building for men in central Iowa. It's being referred to as the Personal Mastery Work Group. It was going to be meeting virtually on the first Monday of every month, closer to 7 o'clock p.m. rather than a.m. It's going to be virtual. It's going to be through Zoom. It's free to participate. And it's going to be hosted by David Cotton, who is hosting this Zoom meeting today. Up there in, well, on the left corner of my screen. And details on how to participate and about the group are going to be circulated on our listserv next Monday or Tuesday. So if that is something that you want to look at and consider, it will be something that you want to participate in going forward on the first Monday of every month. Next announcement is our board of directors will be meeting next Tuesday, also virtually, so that's the 9th of June at 6:30 p.m. It'll also be virtual by Zoom. Members are certainly welcome to tune in if you like. We are going to be discussing some new initiatives, including a more automated meeting reminder format that is more digitized and an RSVP system that we'll be able to do online, and you'll be able to click accept and put it right into your personal calendar. There is some expense associated with this new initiative, and we have the good fortune of a sponsor that is going to cover the costs associated with that digitizing, Ascendant Wealth Management Group, which is a private wealth management advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial, otherwise typically referred to as Ascendant, has agreed to be the sponsor for the cost associated with our automated system that we're putting in place. So you can plan on that, making our process a little bit more efficient going forward, and look forward to that. And we want to express our appreciation to Ascendant and to Brad Holland, who's one of the principals there. Want to encourage you also to check out our website, you can go to the website and hear audio recordings of our past speakers. So that if you miss a meeting, you can go on that website and retrieve an audio of the speaker's presentation. And there are also on that site other worthwhile resources that you might want to access. Our newsletter is continuing. It has been something of a challenge logistically, but we're getting it accomplished and it is getting out. The next copy deadline is 1 week from next Monday on June the 15th. So if you have something that you on your mind that you would like to have included in the newsletter, get your copy to me by the 15th and we will include it in the newsletter. And frankly, that includes you young scholars. If you have something that you want to write about, we would be pleased to incorporate that into our newsletter that goes out every month. So for those of you who are regular contributors, take note, it's the Monday the 15th is our deadline. I want to thank those who have contributed to our scholarship program. We're awarding 7 scholarships this year, $3,000 apiece, to the tune, therefore, of $21,000. To date, we have raised over $325,000 for scholarships for outstanding, deserving, courageous Iowa high school students who are going on to further education after high school graduation. Our first recipient of a scholarship from the First Friday Breakfast Club is now 48 years old. Think about that. There is going to be no meeting on July the 3rd, virtual or in person. That decision was made quite some time ago because of the coincidence around July the 4th. If we had known these circumstances were going to develop, we probably could have done a July 3rd meeting after all. But there's no planned meeting for July the 3rd. There has no decision has yet been made regarding our scheduled at the home of John Schmaker on July the 18th. And the board will be considering that and consulting with John and consulting with medical professionals and looking for a decision to be made about that. The same is also true of our August meeting. That may be in person. It would be great to be able to do that. It would be a cause for celebration. But we're going to be guided by medical expert advisories and guided by science, always a good idea. The board will make a decision in consultation with John about that, and we will communicate that to you well in advance of the 18th. Are there any other announcements that anyone needs to have made at this point?
I have one question to Dave Cotton. Could you, I'm trying to get my full screen with everybody on it again. I kind of went to individuals and now I can't go back.
In the upper right, there should be something called speaker view or something like that that you can click on.
Upper right hand corner.
Whatever it says, click on it and it'll do the opposite.
Okay, I'll play with it for a while. Thank you.
Gallery view versus speaker view are the two options.
Full screen. Okay, if there are no other announcements, I'll let you continue to play with that, Gary, and I will turn to David Cotton, who will introduce our speaker for this morning. David.
Good morning. First, I'll ask everybody to mute your microphones while the speaker's speaking, and then you can unmute if you have a question later on. Dr. Ryan Wise began serving as Dean of the Drake University School of Education in April of 2020. Prior to his time at Drake, he was Director of the Iowa Department of Education from July 2015 through March 2020. As the Director, Dr. Wise led with an emphasis on working together as an education system to make Iowa schools into places where adults can collaborate and students can thrive. He made it a priority to stay connected to Iowa schools and visited 240 school districts statewide. Dr. Wise was named the Policy Leader of the Year by the National Association of State Boards of Education in 2017 and has worked in education at the local, state, national, and international levels. He began his career as a high school history teacher in Mississippi and Nebraska before moving to his home state of South Dakota to launch and lead Teach for America on the Rosebud and Pine Ridge reservations. He also worked to eliminate educational inequity around the world as one of the founding staff members of Teach for All, a global network of education entrepreneurs. Dr. Wise earned a doctorate in education leadership from the Harvard Graduate School of Education, a master's degree in public administration, and the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and a bachelor's degree and teacher certification in history, social studies from Creighton University. He lives in Des Moines with his wife and two sons. Welcome, Dr. Wise.
Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Can everyone hear me okay? I just always want to make sure when I'm on a Zoom call like this. Okay, great. So, to start off with, I know that we're living in really difficult and heavy times. And so I appreciate the opportunity today to help recognize young people who are standing up courageously in their schools and communities to educate their peers on LGBTQ issues and to reduce homophobia. And I also deeply appreciate the First Friday Breakfast Club and your impressive support of young leaders like today's honorees, by, as Jonathan said, awarding well over $300,000 to Iowa students since the creation of these scholarships. That is incredibly impressive. I was also impressed by the stories I read about today's honorees. So just to mention a few of those, Eli and his efforts as an eighth grader to help a friend create their school's GSA, taking it from an underground group to a school-recognized association. Isabel, who it sounds like couldn't be with us here today, but her courage to address homophobia in her school and in her family, which can be so difficult to do. Lily's work to ensure that many teachers in her school were trained and could be clearly identified as true safe zone advocates. Benton's leadership in creating a diversity day at his high school focused on highlighting all marginalized communities. ISIS's outreach to Iowa Safe Schools for help in establishing her school's first GSA. Payson's creation of Haven, an LGBTQ support organization focused on one-on-one interactions at Key High School for other kids on a journey of self-acceptance, and Skylar's activism and focus on identity, particularly for transgender students. This just so many great stories of courage and activism. And I deeply wish times were different in that we were meeting in person so that I would have a chance to visit with each of you and learn more about your stories and the work you've done. And to personally thank you for all you've done in your schools and communities. And I also wish that we weren't sending you out into a post-high school world in which you need to immediately lead and tackle not only the discrimination faced by the LGBTQ community, but the deep-seated racism within American society, as we witnessed not only in the recent killing of George Floyd, but that of so many others. I'm heartened, though, by the track record of action and support you've already built and will no doubt continue in your lives ahead. So thank you for your incredible efforts. So to share a little bit, you know, when I served as director of the Iowa Department of Education from 2015 until just this past March, my focus was on ensuring that all learners in Iowa were safe, healthy, engaged, and prepared. That's what I brought it back to every time I spoke to any group and in my day-to-day interactions with the department, that focus on safe, healthy, engaged, and prepared learners. And so this included supporting efforts on school safety, co-leading Iowa's Children's Mental Health Board, helping schools design teacher leadership systems in which teachers were empowered to lead improvement efforts, including work on equity issues like in the West Des Moines Community School District, and launching initiatives like the online work-based learning clearinghouse, which better connected students to real-world learning opportunities. I also focused, as Dave mentioned, on getting out to schools and spending time in classrooms almost every single week so that I could hear directly from students like those that we're honoring today, and also from administrators, teachers, parents, and board members. And interestingly, I actually had the chance to visit each of the school districts of today's honorees during my time as director, and I even made it all the way up to Key High. So it's great to see where all of these young folks come from, and I know from being in your schools the uphill battle that many of you have faced in changing mindsets and opening eyes in your communities. Now, as Dean of the Drake School of Education, I'm excited to help prepare future teachers, principals, and counselors and superintendents to educate around issues of diversity and difference, including racial, religious, sexual orientation, and gender identity. And in fact, just yesterday, I convened the first meeting of a summer Dean's Advisory Committee on Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity. I also released a statement yesterday addressing the challenges we're facing due to systemic racism and stating the School of Education's unwavering commitment to action and progress. So as dean, one of my primary goals is to create a climate and culture in which people feel seen, heard, and supported. And if we can create that positive environment within the School of Education, then I believe the educators we're preparing are better positioned to replicate and strengthen that approach in their own classrooms, schools, and school districts. And while we move forward to action, like many of you, I've also been doing a lot of reading and reflecting, both about my own identity and the role I can and must play in using my privilege for the benefit of others in equity-related efforts. One of the most powerful clips I've watched, I'm sure, you know, lots of you are probably active on social media, and I feel like there are so many good things coming through in terms of videos and books and articles. And, you know, one of the most powerful clips that I've seen is an interview with Dr. Bettina Love, who explains the difference between allies and co-conspirators in the fight for justice. And in it, she talks about using your privilege. And she powerfully states, put something on the line for somebody. Take a risk. And while the initial context she's speaking in is about white people challenging racism, she goes on to powerfully advocate for people to use their privilege and to put something on the line for those in the LGBTQ community. Now, I know that message is truly preaching to the choir with this group, but taking risks is tough, especially when you enter new environments, like for many of our honorees today, entering their first year of college. And sometimes I know it's helpful to hear encouragement, to hear that your efforts matter and that you make a difference. So I just want to conclude by where I started, by saying thank you to the honorees for all you've done in your schools and communities to make that difference, to make positive change. And I also, again, want to thank the First Friday Breakfast Club for honoring and supporting this truly incredible work of young people across Iowa. So with that, I would be happy to take any questions and engage in a conversation.
Are there questions? I would like to pose one, Dr. Wise. We have historically underfunded public education. We have done it repeatedly, and we have done it consistently over a long period of time. And even if you run the numbers and look for out how much is being spent per student and so forth, one thing that I think has not been recognized is the loss of a subsidy that our public education had a number of years ago that it doesn't have anymore and has never been replaced. And that subsidy was the fact that we essentially confined women who wanted to be in the workforce and who wanted to do that, confined them to being nurses or secretaries or teachers. And when we opened the door and said, if you would like to be the head of IBM or pursue a legal career or a medical career, all of a sudden they started exiting the public education system. We had been having their cheaper labor there for many, many years. And once they were gone, we were left with without that subsidy. I guess the question that I'm wanting to get to is, if we've been underfunding it all these years, and now in a new reality, we need to have more space, where do we come up with the funding? How do we get the funding that would be necessary? Because we're not just talking about teachers and teacher salaries and class sizes. We're talking about physical space to provide distance for the students. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. When I was director of the Department of Education, as I mentioned, you know, I was out in schools and inevitably that issue around funding came up in every conversation I had with superintendents. And it is a real challenge. And the reality we're facing is, frankly, it's going to get worse with the impact of COVID-19 on the state budget. And the increase in expenses that schools are going to face in creating socially distanced environments that are clean and healthy is going to be an enormous undertaking. I know the stress our superintendents are feeling right now in planning for the year ahead. And we're, you know, dealing with some of the same things at Drake, figuring out what does it look like, to bring thousands of students back to a campus in this environment. You know, one thing that I also know, and not to minimize the challenging funding poses because it's real, our superintendents and principals and our school boards do an incredibly good job of prioritizing and thinking about how to use funds in creative ways to meet the needs of all learners. And so to give one example of that, where we have seen an increase in funding over the last decade is in targeted funds specifically to teacher leadership. Iowa funds schools at about $165 million a year to create leadership roles where at minimum 25% of teachers in a school district can enter a leadership role where they're coaching other teachers, where they're providing mentorship. And in some cases, I mentioned West Des Moines, for example, they're taking on leadership of equity issues. I've also seen in other school districts, those teacher leaders taking on roles related to supporting student mental health needs. Probably even more pressing than funding to our school leaders is the mental health crisis in our communities, the needs that so many students and their families have. And so we know that schools are really doing their best to take those limited resources that they have and apply them in the most effective ways possible.
I have a couple of questions. One is the state funding in regards to our Board of Regents and the state universities. We have seen the funding for that decrease so markedly in the last 20 years. We've gone from down to almost less than a third of the funding that it used to be. And then second of all, I'd be curious to see your comments on the present national administration and its effect upon education.
Yeah, so on the first comment on Regents, you know, interestingly, when I was at the Department of Education, we oversaw all 327 public school districts and the 15 community colleges, as well as the area education agencies. So that was our primary focus. And I, our relationship with Regents was in partnership and support. So we had partnerships in different areas. We worked with UNI on mentoring for violence prevention and some of their really great anti-bullying efforts. We worked, for example, with the University of Iowa on the Reading Research Center. So it was more on the support end and less on the global funding issues. But I know, having worked with their presidents and many of their deans at the schools of education, those, you know, nailed it right on the head, Gary. Those are exactly the challenges they're facing, which parallel the funding challenges Jonathan mentioned for K through 12 education and funding. In terms of the federal issues, you know, that's tough. I mean, I think you know, it was interesting serving as a chief state school officer, and you know, once a year we would have Betsy DeVos speak to us, and it is a very narrowly focused administration that, you know, I don't think fully recognizes the more pressing challenges that our schools face. And you know, the one upside, I think, with the current administration in terms of schools, was that there is a, typically, though not in every case, you know, a belief that those most closely positioned to schools are in the best decision-making point of view. And so I think there was an effort. You saw that with the change from the No Child Left Behind Act to the Every Student Succeeds Act to put more decision-making authority back into the hands of states and local school districts. And I think that was very much appreciated. And so definitely at the state level, I think we felt more empowered to move away from a punitive system of sanctions and rewards for performance on a limited range of measures, standardized testing, and toward a more holistic and inclusive improvement process. So, you know, I did try to focus more on the positive aspects, but certainly lots of challenges there.
We have six scholars here this today who ended their high school career in a world they didn't expect, in a way that none of us could really forecast. And I'm sure they're excited to go off, you know, and start their academic career post-high school. I guess as a dean, what advice would you give these prospective freshmen as they enter into this and it's nothing like any of us done before, and how to really be focused to maximize their success and their positive experience?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. But as I look and I can see, you know, several of them, Skylar and Eli and Lily and Payson, and I just think, you know, you all have demonstrated, just reading, you know, the brief paragraphs about what you have done in your time in high school. Keep doing that. You've already demonstrated your ability to make connections with your peers, to tackle obstacles, to confront those that are in power that are creating barriers for people to be successful. And so, you know, those challenges you've burst through, keep doing that when you go into your new environment, and find those that are allies in the efforts, and because I think there are more and more. You know, it's been interesting this week. So I live right in the middle of Des Moines, and on Wednesday night, the protest march to the mayor's house came right through my neighborhood. And, you know, 500 plus people gathered in the middle of 42nd and Grand, right? And to see that momentum and things like that start with a few committed folks. And then all of a sudden, in a neighborhood that's not known for its social activism, there were people coming out of their houses and joining in this and coming together. And so I think you all are part of a brave few that can mobilize the masses and bring people out of their houses for committed causes. So I think, you know, keep doing what you're doing and know that when you lead, others will follow.
Jonathan, you're muted.
Are there other questions? If not, I would like to pose one more, going back to the money. Iowa has open enrollment, and it allows for students from one school district to transfer to another, theoretically, any school district in the state that they prefer. There's no provision for providing for transportation, so the people who can take advantage of that mobility, that choice, are those who can afford to get from point A to point B, and those who are less financially fortunate can't. And the tax dollars that go from the sending school district go to the receiving school district. And a receiving school district, the way it currently works, is required to accept an incoming student unless they don't have room, which on its face makes sense. But when I was on the school board, having room had to do with two things, teachers and bricks and mortar. And that was our expense. That was all of our expense. And so if you have room, that is, you have enough teachers and you have enough classroom space to take in an incoming student, you don't have to add any expense at all, but you get their tax dollars as a bonus. They bring their tax dollars with them. And that has resulted in sort of a resegregation, an Americanized apartheid, if you will, where we have central school districts that are more predominantly racial minority students, and lily white affluent suburbs surrounding them, sort of a donut effect. What do you see as the potential for changing the way we fund schools, which works to disadvantage those who have fewer resources and who are predominantly and coincidentally people of color?
Yeah, so I think you've done a great job of synthesizing so many different challenges and balancing acts that exist within our education system in Iowa. You know, I will say I'm the parent of a soon-to-be freshman at Roosevelt High School here in Des Moines and a soon-to-be sixth grader at Callanan Middle School. And so, you know, my wife and I are proud public school parents, and we know from our parenting experience, you know, the challenges our schools face, and from my kids and their friends and the realities their friends face. And, you know, we know in Des Moines that there are some restrictions on open enrollment. So Des Moines, along with, I think, three other school districts in the state, they have special exemptions that allow them to kind of create limits on the outflow of students. And you'll hear, you know, when you talk to community leaders, different opinions on that. There are certainly financial implications, and at the same time, there's also efforts to empower parents to be able to have their kids in the school district that they feel is the right fit for them. And so, you know, valid arguments on both sides. We know, though, there's also the challenge, not only is it an issue of race and ethnicity and outflow that creates in urban areas, but we also know when I go out to rural communities, there are many rural communities that have a lot of open enrollment out. You know, when the parents commute to a larger town, you know, they sometimes take their kids out of the rural community and put them in schools there. So I don't think there is an easy answer there, right? Because I think any direction you go, either to expand choice and open enrollment or to tighten it up, you're really going to have pushback from different sides there. And it's not always the folks that you would imagine. Some rural districts actually benefit from enrollment in, and so from open enrollment. So it's always trying to, I think, get the right balance. And I just close by saying, it ties back to how I answered funding as well, with really creative school boards, as you know, Jonathan, from your, you know, time on one. Boards adjust to their reality, and while many would like to change the funding structure, the open enrollment structure, I have met so many that adjust creatively to continually meet the needs of their students despite funding and enrollment challenges.
Are there any other questions?
I have one if you have time.
Yes.
I am curious about distance learning in my home county of Sac County. One of the largest school districts there is actually closing a middle school and an elementary school, which creates even more distance between students and buildings. My concern is that with distance learning, which is now being kind of hard because of the pandemic, I think it's just exponential how it's going to affect things in the future. I'm really concerned about the performing arts and visual arts, where I was involved for most of my career. I don't quite see how these are going to not suffer a lot unless we have something like academies that come about, and maybe for dance and for band and orchestra, for visual arts. Do you see that as something that might occur in the future?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think there's certainly just unlimited potential of what might occur in the future of distance learning. You know, this has been a fascinating experience and experiment in some ways of going from, you know, largely brick and mortar education to entirely online. And it's interesting to hear educators talk about how some of these changes might be permanent, how they're thinking differently about how they teach and the process of learning. And I think in the performing arts, you know, whether it's full-blown academies or just simply adjusting to, how do we do auditions and performances and teaching in the arts in an online way? And I think we're going to see lots of creative examples of that. And whether it goes again to, you know, fully online academies, I think there's potential there. I will say, just as I was leaving the Department of Education, we were starting to talk to the Juilliard School about, they were pre-pandemic getting ready to expand some online education. And I serve on the board of Harvard with the COO of the Juilliard School. And, you know, they were just getting ready to figure out a state to pilot with. And I said, how about Iowa? And so, you know, I don't know where that stands right now because obviously things have been thrown a little to the wind. But I know some of those places like Juilliard were already thinking about how do we expand offerings? And could we do it to states that have, you know, a rural population like Iowa?
Other questions? If not, I want to thank Dr. Wise again for participating in this remote learning environment that we're using nowadays. It has to be a real challenge to educate future educators and prepare them to deliver a quality education under conditions and circumstances and in a world that is going to be substantially different. And the appreciation for diversity and the strength that it represents is not always appreciated in some schools, school districts, or among some of our fellow citizens. And it seems to me that the George Floyd homicide may have launched a renewed dialogue about the importance and strength of diversity, about discrimination, and about the imperative of equal rights and equal opportunities for everyone, not just for people of color, but also for people who are in the LGBTQ community as well. I'm convinced that bigotry is simply prideful ignorance. And that means that education attacks bigotry at its core. That, it seems to me, is your mission, in dispensing education. I want to just remind everyone that, Elie Wiesel, who was a Nobel Peace Prize winner, said that in the face of oppression, there is no neutral ground. If you remain silent, God Almighty assigns you to the side of the oppressor. And it seems to me that that is a good guiding principle. And I think it was Martin Luther King who said that the moral arc of history bends toward justice. And as one of our earlier speakers reminded us, it bends toward justice, but it doesn't do it all by itself. It doesn't do it on its own. And our students who are being honored today have demonstrated that they're going to help bend that arc toward justice. I want to thank you again for participating and wish you luck in the challenge that you face there at Drake University. And with that, I think I will turn to Randy Swartz regarding our honorees. Randy?
Thank you, Jonathan. Good morning, everybody. I'm Dr. Randy Swartz, and I head up the FFPC Scholarship Committee. First off, I'd like to thank my nominating committee for their hard work in selecting this year's scholarship recipients. The committee consists of Sandy Bowman, Brett Burke, Ryan Crane, Ken Hansen, Rick Miller, Tim Schreck, David Wilford, and Paul Williams. The FFB scholarship was established in 1997 to recognize graduating Iowa high school seniors that have worked to reduce homophobia in their school and community. Since its founding, over a third of $1 million have been awarded. This year we have seven recipients receiving a $3,000 scholarship. The scholarships are supported by our members and community allies. A special note, two of this year's scholarships have been sponsored by Trudy Hurd. Thank you, Trudy, and to everyone for donating to this worthy cause. I'd like to ask the students to open the packages that I sent them and show us your award trophies. And while you're doing that, I'll go over each one of yours bios.
I think they have demonstrated real integrity here. They didn't open their presents before they were supposed to.
I did ask them not to. So
yeah, go ahead.
All right. First up, Eli Steenhook, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your last name right, Eli, but Eli is a graduate of Colfax Mingo High School. Eli plans to attend the University of Iowa for an advanced degree focused on mental health. As an eighth grader, Eli helped a high school friend help create their school's GSA group. At first, the group had to be underground, but after a presentation and discussion in front of the district school board, the GSA group became official. He lives with pride, exemplified by telling his coming out story for speech competition. First in the district and then state competition, then in front of the generally conservative community of Colfax. Eli demonstrates courage and poise, and we see him going far. Congratulations, Eli. Not present with us today, unfortunately, is Isabel Hasse, but Isabel graduated from West Burlington High School. She plans to attend the University of Iowa for college with a long-term goal of being a pediatrician. Isabel is this year's activist ally on our list of 2020 scholarship recipients. She helped start the GSA at West Burlington and is an officer of the club. Isabel's stories of addressing homophobia in her school and in her family tells us that she will be supportive of the LGBTQ community for many years to come. Thank you and congratulations, Isabel.
Woo-hoo!
Next up is Lily Duncan. Lily is an intelligent and confident graduate of Iowa City West High School who identifies as queer. Lily was a member of the Colors Club, her school's GSA all through high school, and in her senior year was co-leader. One outstanding accomplishment Lily led was to ensure that any teacher who displayed a safe zone sticker in their classroom actually had taken the training that supported that designation. It turned out most had not, but by working with the school board, Lily and the Colors Group ensured that many teachers were trained and could be clearly identified as true safe zone activists. Lilly plans to focus her future studies on psychology and to be a leader in addressing LGBTQ mental health issues. We are proud to support her goals. Congratulations, Lilly.
Woohoo!
Benton Renaud. Benton is a graduate of Ankeny Centennial High School. The primary word that defines Benton is leader. His high school experience includes creation of a diversity day at his high school, focused on highlighting all marginalized communities. He has been a member of the Iowa Safe School Student Leadership Council for 2 years and was the keynote speaker at the organization's annual fundraising event. He has been recognized locally, statewide, and nationally for his leadership skills. Yet his stories of coming out to each of his parents demonstrate that regardless of accomplishments, self-acceptance and family acceptance can still be one of the greatest achievements. We see amazing things in your future. Congratulations, Benton.
Great job.
Isis Wally. Isis is defined by her perseverance and determination. She is a graduate of Knoxville High School. In her sophomore year, Isis and a friend worked at creating the school's first GSA. Teacher supporters were identified, but none would sign on as an organization sponsor until Isis reached out to Iowa Safe Schools for help. In the beginning, the group and its members experienced homophobia and vandalism. Today, it is a thriving part of school culture. Having experienced conversion therapy and other challenges as a result of her identity, Isis continues to move forward. Keep going, Isis. We're proud to be able to support you. I'd also like to add that, Isis, your scholarship is sponsored by Trudy Hurd. Okay, Payson. Payson Rhea. He lives in Lansing, and he graduated from Key High School in Northeast Iowa with a graduating class of only 37 students. He has lived as an openly gay person for several years. Payson experienced many extreme challenges and difficulties relating to his sexuality while growing up, only to finally realize that his self-acceptance is what truly mattered. In his junior year, he formulated a plan and this past year started Haven, an LGBTQ support organization focused on one-on-one interactions at Key High School for other kids on the journey of self-acceptance in a rural conservative area of Iowa. Payson demonstrates courage and resiliency that we find incredibly admirable. Congratulations, Payson. I'd like to add that Payson's scholarship is also sponsored by Trudy Hurd. Thank you, Trudy. Skylar Manna, last but not least. Skylar attended Valley High School in West Des Moines and will be attending Iowa State University in the fall. Skylar's focus is on identity, particularly for transgender students. As a member of the Spectrum group at Valley, she participated in trainings with teachers about gender identity and using correct pronouns of choice with their students. She was also among the group of students removed from the state capitol building earlier this year for using the bathrooms in line with their gender identity. Skylar is a true student activist with an interest in mental health issues affecting the LGB community. Keep up the great work, Skylar. And congratulations to all the students. I'll turn it back over to Jonathan.
Thank you very much, Randy. I also want to thank Trudy for sponsoring two of our scholarships this year. I want to thank Dr. Schwartz, our scholarship committee chair, for sponsoring one of the scholarships, and also to thank Polk County for sponsoring one of our scholarships this year. That's tremendous, and we very much appreciate it from you outstanding and generous donors. I want to congratulate our students. You have now joined a very distinguished fraternity, sorority of outstanding young leaders of the future. And we appreciate the leadership that you have already shown, and we are certainly optimistic. We are hopeful that you will follow Dr. Wise's good advice, that you continue what you've been doing and continue to show that leadership, and that you will in turn motivate others to do the right thing. I think it is tremendous what you have already accomplished, and it is the hope of our future what you are going to be accomplishing going forward. I want to thank Dr. Wise again for his participation and for the insights that you have offered to us. That's been very worthwhile, and we appreciate it, and appreciate your willingness to participate in this sort of remote learning environment that we're using today. As I indicated earlier, we are not going to have a meeting on July the 3rd because of its coincidence with the holiday weekend, and a decision is yet to be made about our July 18 social. We will be communicating the decision about that. And whether we will be meeting in person in August or not will also be communicated. We have an invitation to a very interesting speaker outstanding, but we haven't gotten it pinned down yet, so that will be yet to be determined. But we will be meeting again in August on the first Friday. We will have a distinguished speaker to offer insights to you and provide you an opportunity to ask questions and learn from them. To you students who are being honored today, I would encourage you to stay in touch. Among other things that we are considering is putting our newsletter, a monthly newsletter, online and having the opportunity for it to be accessed remotely. If we were to do that, interestingly enough, it would make it a more colorful newsletter. As it is right now, it would be prohibitively expensive to send it out in color, so we send it out in black and white. But I get to see it in color when it comes from our production editor, Wade Peterson. And if it were online, it would provide an opportunity for you to see all of the graphics that he is able to include in a much more colorful way. If that ultimately is happening, we hope you will stay in touch and that you will continue to access that that medium as you continue in your careers. And with that, we will conclude our meeting unless there is anything else that anyone needs to say. Gary Moore.
Yes, I just wanted to mention to each of our scholars this morning that the June meeting and our honoring of you is the highlight of the year for our First Friday Breakfast Club. I am so sorry that you are not able to experience that gratitude and recognition in person. I would like to invite you all, though, if you find yourself in Des Moines on the first Friday of any month, please come join us and let us extend our appreciation and admiration for what you have accomplished. Thank you so much for being a part of First Friday Breakfast Club and this our exploration of our virtual meetings. Have a good life, and congratulations again.
And Jonathan, I would just like to make a quick comment.
Yes.
David Cotton did a wonderful thing the other day by helping me get online. And you talked about miracles, but there's geniuses out there, too, that can talk to some of us that don't understand technology at all and can make it work and make it happen. And my personal thank you to him, with an added thing that if others are having trouble getting on, David's your guy to go to.
And I will close with one anecdote about an earlier June meeting where we had a number of scholars present in person and their families, and it was a warm and wonderful experience. We were inside at Hoyt Sherman, and outdoors we were being protested by none other than the Reverend Fred Phelps and his ilk. And as it turned out, we used that occasion to ask people to pledge some amount of money for every minute that Fred Phelps and his group were protesting. And we raised with that fund, which I called the Phelps Helps fundraiser, we raised over $22,000. And to this day, Fred Phelps is responsible for the largest contribution to the First Friday Breakfast Club of any human being on the face of the earth. And as it turned out, it was warm and cozy and wonderful in person inside Hoyt Sherman, and it was raining outside on the protesters. I decided that the Lord works in mysterious ways. And with that, we will conclude for today. We will look forward to future meetings in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.